Hey guys, Will here, jumping in before the episode for a little bit of shameless self-promotion. There's a couple things that, as I thought about it, I wanted to come back and mention before the episode, even though you'll hear them again later. One is this idea that we mentioned on the show before, and I want to make sure people hear about it up front and check it out. Send us an email, contact@whitebookpodcast.com, or mention it in the comments on the site or on CardGameDB. I would love to try and organize some kind of U.S. Stalic Light type thing. There happens to be a castle here in Springfield, obviously much more recently constructed and such. Pythian Castle, you can look that up. I'll probably throw a link on the site as well. It would be a little expensive, definitely take some logistical finagling to try to get it figured out. But if there's enough actual real hard interest from people, I would love to see if we can get something rolling for that. Also, the other one, here's the real self-promotion, and that is going to be that you go check out my eBay sales that are going to be going up this weekend, starting on Friday. I'm going to start listing a bunch of gaming and odds and ends stuff, some LCG promos and probably some playmats and things. I need to start clearing out the apartment, and hey, I've got a wedding to keep paying for here in the spring. As some of you know, that is kind of expensive. So if you get the chance, head over to eBay, check out some of my sales. That's going to be Kennen first. Oh, and also, as an aside, we've got a Black Friday sale of our own going on the website. Some of you may have noticed the store link and some of the t-shirts we've been putting up. We're working on more designs, but I wanted to go ahead and have a sale with what we have right now. So if you hop in and you're thinking about one of the shirts, you can use the coupon code BF2015. BF2015 for Black Friday 2015 to have 20% taken off of your t-shirt order. I would really love it if you guys jumped in there and threw a little extra support. The sales from the items on the website I'm going to be using directly to pay for the web hosting and podcast services and such, and extra for prizes for the community. So that's the game plan on those. And we'll see how it goes. Thanks, and enjoy the episode.
Mummers and monkeys require applause. So did Eris, for that matter.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast. The original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, CardGameDB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
I can't decide if that's clapping or fapping.
It's both. No? What do you think I have two hands for?
Wait a minute.
That's with one.
Wait a minute.
Clap up.
Stroke, clap, stroke.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. Well, we've already gotten rid of our four children this episode. Good job, guys.
Yep, there we go. We're going to earn that explicit rating again in iTunes.
Wait, you lost it? This thing really has gone downhill since I was on.
Yeah, when we swapped feeds and swapped to the new name, it reset us.
Guys, I'd like to, listeners, I'd like to introduce you to the second best Stark Wings player in the world.
Oh, you know, that's fine. I'll take a silver medal, and I'd like to say the oldest playing. In all fairness, I
three.
Still might have gotten past that Laney deck. I could have won Worlds. I sincerely believe that.
I think there's something to that. That Wheels deck was ridiculous.
And I went 2-2 against it on the day. I don't think any other deck can say that they had even odds on it.
Can I just say, like, I told everyone they should be running Paper Shield at Worlds, and I was 100% right.
I ran as many as I could.
Yeah, that is true.
And a Royal Decree.
And two Patriarchs.
All right, can I go?
I think you were right. I should have done Harrenhal, because I should have realized that people would have thought it was soft banned, and someone would exploit a Harrenhal free meta, so the meta call was to run Harrenhal, even though Mira was the stronger card.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I said it.
I know, but I didn't think... I thought I could handle it. And other than that deck, I did, in all fairness, so...
Yeah.
It's just, if you have that Harrenhal, like, that Wheels trick just doesn't work.
Nope. I'll just kill that follower of the Many-Face God. Over and over again. I mean, I really champion Kaz. Just because someone else did it.
Can we hang loose on that for just a sec and point out that there was no actual introduction? I'm Will, the second best Stark Wings player in the world is Kyle. The man doing the clapping, will say... appeared to have been Roy, and the intrepid intro reader this week was Aaron.
Please don't give us any feedback on Aaron opening the episode. We don't want to hear
I
it.
I did awesomely, because I picked the quote, by the way.
It was very fitting.
So, in Stalik, if anyone missed it, Stalik is the European Championship for our newer players.
It is literally a castle,
it
in
is
case
literally
people think that.
Stark, Dark Wings, Dark Words, won the very final real major 1.0 tournament. Despite apparently a Chilean tournament, whatever. No offense, Chile. Come on.
Like, yeah, I love the Chilean.
Stalik's 200-plus person tournament? No, you know, that's the last one as far as I'm concerned.
Final major tournament, we'll say.
Officially just at 2.0 now.
It's so sad. I miss it. Like, I don't want this to become that episode, but, like, this week I had some real feels where I was really just jonesing for some 1.0 games, and I realized it's not going to be as easy to find people to play that anymore.
Adrian posted in the 2.0 group him burning his cards, and I literally teared up for a second.
That was messed up. I saw the photo, and I was like, nope, I can't do this. I do this.
My immediate reaction, and I might have been drunk, but whatever. My immediate reaction, like, I literally teared up. I was like, wow, I can't. No, it's just wrong. No.
I'm going to be that guy that tries to hold on, keeps a couple decks built, busts it out. That awkward guy, that's going to be... Me and Kaiser have already started talking about trying to do some like community unofficial events and stuff to just try and nurse it along.
Oh.
Like, I'm addicted. I can't let it go. I'm not ready.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some talk from several people about putting together kind of a players council type thing to keep running things, so...
Hey, and 2.0 already has its first Bloodthirst style deck, so...
Yeah, it's like...
What?
Just what we've been waiting for. I missed some news. Tell me more.
Yeah, there's a character light deck.
No, it's character heavy. It's the
That doesn't sound like Bloodthirst then, but go on.
It's the way it plays. Like playing it or playing against it feels like playing a Bloodthirst or Longship Maiden's Bane deck. It's the wall defense decks. Like they
more or less gotcha. Yeah, because they're just playing a different angle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be argued that FFG wanted that to exist this time around, like very specifically.
Action. I mean,
right.
Yeah, but the wall does encourage that. Having just played a little bit of Night's Watch for the first time today in significant amounts, yeah, I mean, that could be pretty frustrating to play against. The person I was playing against called the deck annoying. So it'll be interesting to see.
If that's our threshold for annoying, though, like I'm okay with that. Like, it's very beatable.
It's not that beatable, but I played it against John, and after about an hour, I beat him. Like, and he just threw a giant hissy fit. It was the funniest thing in the world, because we were in a public octagon game, and every, like, all these people, like, it's like, oh shit, Glazer and Dark Nudge, so a bunch of people watch. And, like, John just started losing his shit. He was like, why are you playing that shit? I hate the wall! And just lost his mind. It was fine.
Well, that sounds...
Because it's a Bloodthirst deck, and at the end of a game, when you can't win, like, a single challenge for, like, 8 turns in a row, and I'm just like, okay, done, we're at Dominance, cool, I'm going to take your power for Dominance 2, or your whatever power you had earlier with my painted table, and then you can just be sad because I'm getting 4 power a turn.
That is true. It is annoying if you can't get ahead of it. If you're going to lose to it, you see it so far in advance, and it is frustrating. So that's where I think 2.0 at. There's a lot of games like that. Just I feel like it's easier to see that you've lost against that deck than other decks.
Yeah. I mean, we know
I would almost, as a social experiment, have a bunch of players like look at a board state and hands after, like, let's say turn 2, like pre-plot turn 3. Look at everyone's hands, look at the board state, and call who's going to win that game and see what their percentage of being accurate is. I mean, I think it's that deck just throws in your face what is a sad truth, like, of this early game, is that it just decides, okay, well, I've got these pieces, now I'm going to win, and there's little to nothing you can do about it for the next 5 turns, which is fine. But
no, there's a long game. There's the immediate aggro short game where you can win or lose the game on, like, turn 2. But, like, once you get solid at building decks and once you know what you're doing, and assuming you actually see a draw, which is fairly important, like, you can come from behind. You just need to be very smart and careful.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I think it is possible, but I don't think it is. Flips are, I hear a lot less stories of them in second than I do in other games. But we'll see.
Yeah, flips have a higher skill cap, I would say, than they did in first edition. The tools aren't there yet to flip a game. They're there for people who, particularly if you've been playing as much as Aaron's been playing Octagon, you know, that they're there, but it's definitely not as easy without tools like Valor or tools like For Snow of Winter, which at least we're getting soon, or the Aftermath. It's harder to flip games without a ridiculous amount of skill or without your deck being built in the way the wall decks are built, which is to stall, stall, stall.
Yeah, what a lot of this means is, for listeners who are like, damn it, then what do I do, is you should be building specifically for setup. You still need a couple of high-cost guys for certain matchups. Like, those mini-curve decks that were functionally everywhere right after Worlds, they're completely eaten alive by wall-style defensive. Like, they have no shot in hell at getting through that. But
yes. The
other side of that is those big guys that were becoming less popular, they can sometimes gain renown fast enough to outrush those walls. It's a fairly big deal.
If they've got the renown, I mean, that still kind of points us toward, you know, a handful of houses to really push that particularly well. So
yep. They
kind of skew certain directions.
I agree.
Those being probably Tyrell, Stark, Lannister. I'm trying to think if anybody else has 2 renowned people in house.
Greyjoy.
Euron,
Balon, and not really, but sort of Theon.
With the right setup, without Targ, Dany can get renown.
If
you're running Dany.
Right. Specific builds, right? And then you can banner for renown. There's options. It's a slog, but it's nice that there's different options in different decks and that every house is at least somewhat viable, if not viable.
And they'll be curious to see how much, I mean, just the couple things we've had spoiled, like, I think First Snow is going to all but eliminate these mini curve decks early on, because to know that can take care of a whole archetype with a plot.
See, I don't agree. I think that it kills the wall defensive decks for the time being, because they really can't afford to have all their chud tossed back to hand. But I don't think that kind of thing especially hurts Martell, because almost all of Martell's chuds are the kind that you get, like, extra effects for when they bounce back.
Which, I mean, I can think of one offhand. Am I missing?
Ariohota and the draw thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess you can think of Hota as a chud. I don't know. I have a hard time thinking of 5 cost as a chud, because, let's be honest, if you want his effect, you either need the 5 cost or Arion for sure. So
it's not going to bounce off of First Snow. First Snow is what, 3 and lower?
No.
He does 3. Bounce off of First Snow, though.
He's 3 gold. He's 5 to Ember.
That's right.
But he
gets hit by it, but I'm not sure I quite call him chud, since you either specifically need Arion or a significant amount of gold to play him.
Those decks.
Because you want to ambush.
So you reduce Arion, you get her in, and then it ends up being fairly cheap. Either way, like, your worst case with him is you just go, oh, well, I just played a 3 for 5 next turn, right?
Yeah.
Still.
As long as you're not up over your reserve. Okay. So, I don't know. But I think the mini curves will kind of taper off. The meta, I think, is going to come after them pretty hard, and people are going to get scared out of playing them for a while. But I don't think it crushes them by any means. They'll have to make some judicious choices about what to keep in their hand. But
I mean,
It's not the end of the world.
They're better again, right? So many people go down for Personal for a while, and then we get Pilar in either the box or the next cycle, or, I mean, maybe this cycle, but it sure doesn't seem that way, given how many parts you've had spoiled.
Yeah.
You'd think that'd be, like, the first one to spoil if it were coming. So either box or next cycle. And whenever that happens.
Well, I also think, though, that the mini-curve decks are also going to be pushed to including more efficient four-cost characters, something like, which make Night's Watch stronger or Tyrell stronger for these mini-curve decks that have somewhat acceptable four-cost armies, or even, you know,
I mean, Martell has one of the best, yeah.
So something that will keep your curve low, but survive First Snow and give you a turn that, oh, sure, they First Snowed your Chud back, but you can survive that turn or eat that turn, and then you'll just shit out your characters again. So I think it will just reshape what mini curves look like, but I don't think the archetype will go away, particularly if we see anything that's, you know, the Beyond the Wall spoilers spoiled that we're getting plot copying, but if we get plot blanking, then I think the mini curve decks will be a lot safer than they actually appear right now.
That's a good note.
We're not building a mini curve, but you know we are doing, longtime listeners, we are building our favorite type of deck to build on this show. That's right, Lannister. So, did you really expect anything else?
Since no one has done, or I haven't really seen, Lannister Dragon yet, Lannister Dragon is how we're going to start. So when building a banner deck, the way I like to start is by picking what 12 specific cards from the banner house I'm going to want.
I don't know if I want to go all the way to a full 12 to start, because I think some of these, you know, we're going to wind up looking at the Lannister cards and looking for some synergies here. Like, we got to have that work together. For instance, like, if we decide to go with Cersei, I kind of like the look of the Handmaiden. But if we don't, they can probably go.
Well, let's take a look at which ones we're definitely going to use. We're definitely going to use one of each dragon, right?
Yeah, I think the hatchlings are efficient.
Okay, so one of each hatchling. Illyrio is our main synergy. He's our main reason to do this. Does that mean we go two or three?
Why don't we start with three and then cut down?
Works. And
I do like to go fat trim as opposed to search for cards.
Makes sense. And we definitely want Jorah, but we don't have a way to return a dead Jorah, so is two okay with everyone?
I feel like two's right.
Yeah.
And I find, yeah, he's so good. Even if he just sits there and wins you Dom, like, I'm much more impressed with him in practice than I was in theory.
Okay. We're not adding, that's eight cards, so we're going to add four more. Let's not do that yet, but let's look at what else we have so we can keep it in mind.
That sounds like a good idea. I mean, other stuff on my short list are definitely going to be the Loyalists.
We should be running three Loyalists, so there.
Puts us at 11,
yeah,
if we do that.
Now we have exactly one more spot. We're obviously.
Yeah, I mean, that's if we're running the bare minimum of 12. I mean, I would feel comfortable going a few above that if the deck calls for it.
I was like, my gut says a Drogo does some work.
Wait, Drogon? Loyal.
Oh, yeah, we just did that.
Yeah.
So yeah. There's the options are Drogo's Arak, which we're obviously not running because, no. Braided Warrior, which is acceptable as a one of, I guess. We could.
I mean, if we need a military presence, you could do worse than three strength for only two gold.
Good on setup.
Yeah, the hand.
Exactly.
And could take Widow's Wail.
Yeah, I had actually blew my mind over the weekend with my Targ Fealty deck. I had a six card setup, and I was pretty pumped for that in second ed. It was partly on the back of the Braided Warrior.
Oh, we should discuss what deck won the vote, but I guess we can do that in props and slots.
Yeah.
Because it was a surprise to me. Okay, Handmaiden is an option. We discussed that already, so.
Mm-hmm.
The Unsullied, but probably not. We don't really have any synergy with losing strength. Waking the Dragon, also probably not, right?
Loyal, according to ThronesDB.
I'm on ThronesDB. Waking the Dragon is not loyal.
Yeah, I'm on CardGameDB, and it's not.
It says non-loyal now, okay.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
We're not running Dothraki C without Dothraki. That would be a bit silly. And Illyria's estate seems like it's unlikely because we're keeping our gold curve down for this, right?
Yeah. So, I think you skipped over cards from the new pack, though, right?
Oh, it didn't. Not have except taking
Merchant Prince, for instance.
Yeah, we're not letting Merchant Prince. Let's move.
Who I don't think is worth it. Based Dothraki, I don't think is worth it.
Yeah.
I forget about those cards.
So it's That's basically it. They weren't big additions for Targ. But I will say...
I think Mr. Truck is loyal anyway, no?
It is, yeah. Oh, well, that's a good point. But if we're considering some of this other stuff, of course, as you mentioned, the Handmaiden synergy there, I kind of like that. Also, looking at things, I mean, we've got... Oh, I mean, everything we are including from Targ right now, except for the Loyalist, is unique. And so that kind of makes me think about Waking the Dragon. That surprise stand can be big sometimes, even if you have to bounce something.
I mean, it's best with Jorah, because then you can just get multiple uses out of them.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. I'd still rather have the setup. Like, I feel like Lannister has a lot of really good events, and I generally tend to rather not run headfirst into, like, running a mediocre event nonsense card over a good one.
Sure.
I think we've hit where we need to go to move on to the Lannister cards, and we could come back to Targaryen.
Agreed.
So let's look at Lannister characters.
Yeah.
Taking it from the top, like, let's ignore Neutral's round, just do Lannister.
Yeah, I'm good with going straight there. Should we really go, when you say go from the top, are you meaning go from the top of your list in, like, alphabetical order, or would it be better to like, highlight the order we need stuff in, like priority levels, so that we don't accidentally miss, say, the Loyalists?
I mean, that was just me being illiterate because I can't read.
Okay.
But, like, is this actually showing up? Let's take it from the top alphabetically. We will read absolutely every card. First is Burned Men. I like two, but they end up often cut. Want to start with two?
I'm good with that. I'm kind of liking a 2-2 split these days between them and the cloaks, so absolutely. We'll kind of see how we go.
The cloaks are what ends up getting cut for my banner stuff almost always.
Mm-hmm.
But since we just mentioned the cloaks, do we want to stick with me?
Then
we
two for now.
Okay. Cersei, one of?
Yeah.
I actually kind of like, I mean, this you guys are welcome to disagree, but I think running a Cersei module with Targaryen is really strong. The ability to run the two intrigue location that we can now get with support of the people, stand her with Handmaiden, stand her with Illyrio, and just keep pushing and putting a lot of pressure with intrigue challenges is kind of an interesting way to build a deck.
Sure, once Valar exists, I agree.
I agree with it now. I'm with Roy 100%. I think people are way too down on intrigue challenges.
I mean,
I agree. I think there's still a lot to be said for the randomized factor of that discard. And honestly, I think there's also something to be said for us building a deck to try to go ahead and utilize that. I mean, we can't just write it off without delving into it.
So so the issue...
You don't want Eric loses.
No. Okay, listen to the actual logic before you whine. The actual issue ends up being for that is most houses or most good houses have draw that you're not going to be hitting with the deck. What they functionally are able to do is play out their hand and then, or play out the high majority of their hand, and unless they have a kill event, go second, and if they can go second, they are getting their draw either at the end of the phase or from, like, let's say, winning unopposed challenges or winning a challenge on offense by five or more. And you're not actually hitting those cards with the injury.
So,
and once they see this,
you're telling me then?
Because I'm not done. One second. Because what they functionally have the second they have enough economy, or if they're running high gold plots, are is they have no reason once they see this module to ever, ever, ever hold a card in hand. And you don't have them. There's no real way to punish them for not keeping cards.
I mean, you've been a big... There's multiple things here, but one is that you've been such a huge advocate for Varys in the past, and I think Lannister is one of the best options to be able to afford him when they're in a pinch. So that's an option. Another aspect of what you're talking about there points us toward a need to control the initiative game, which, to a certain extent, we can try to do from plots. From our plots, we can't just assume our opponent wins initiative and goes second all the time and thus is drawing after we've done our challenges. Although, interestingly, Lannister also got a new card, a Cersei-related card, you might say, in Taking the Black, Cersei's wheelhouse there, which, conveniently enough, gives us a bonus for being chosen to go first. So I might argue that...
Very different build, but okay.
I'm not sure that that's entirely different. Running that Cersei module, I feel, is putting pressure on our opponent to choose us to go first, thus giving us probably most of the time still card advantage. Though if we need the income advantage, we can take it that way.
I mean, I also just don't want to go first as a rule in life. Like, I use that card as a way to make them make me go second. Like, punishing them for going, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the nice thing about Cersei's Wheelhouse in the build that we're talking about here is that it gives us an upside.
Like, Wheelhouse is going in either way. The question is, do you want to run, like, three Cersei? Because if you're going to do a module, you have to do the module, right? So at that point, you're running three Cersei.
And the Handmaidens.
Three Handmaidens. And then you're also going to have to add Casterly Rock.
At two of, at most, though. With the nice thing is we can use support of the people.
Like, you are not convincing me to run more than one Casterly Rock.
All right, one. I don't want to push us down too much on a tangent. I just think it's an interesting, different archetype that I think you can really start seeing now that we have these Taking the Black cards that really can push a sort of flexible, location-heavy build that I agree with you, Aaron. Like, out of just the core set, a Lannister Intrigue build is extremely weak. But I think just the addition of the Wheelhouse and support of the people gives us the options and flexibility to use some of these weirder Lannister locations like Casterly Rock, that, or even just more reliably use Lannisport to keep our card advantage going in a way that wasn't possible a month ago.
I think being in a world where if I can sit safely on like four cards and I know I can, like you said, you're putting them in a position where they have to empty their hand, or I'm going to empty it for them. If my opponent's in a position where all he's doing is top decking, I think that works out for me, even if he is going second. Because what happens a turn he doesn't draw his retaliatory, like, kill effect event, like, and he's just sitting on two locations and a chud, like, that's what he top decks into. Like, I still see a lot of value, especially in a repeatable two-claim intrigue challenge. Like, I think that pressure really does add up.
Okay, well, let's try it. A concern, and you guys can disagree if you want, Lannister's not winning power challenges by five or more.
It happens,
but, like, it's really easy to stop unless you get very, very good draw. Like,
Are we going to put the big dog in?
Like, if we're going to fuel the...
Early on, you almost certainly don't want Tywin to be doing power challenges to win by five or more.
Well, we've also got some other options. No. Again, in Taking the Black, we have literally a dog,
Hound.
Figuratively, literally. We have the Hound, who gives a large boost to the power presence.
All right, so we're going to go with three Cersei?
Let's try it. Let's just see how it goes.
Yeah. Let's go back to Targ and add three Handmaidens.
I mean, part of this is a building experiment for the listeners, so...
We're going to try it, see how it goes.
Let's tread new ground. That's the thought here, right? Is to tread new ground.
I'm immediately cutting Gold Cloaks now, because now we have way more cards for Gold Cloaks.
Hold on, though, Aaron. I would argue if we're cutting one of the ambush guys and you're worried about our power icon presence, that we cut the burn men instead.
Yeah, no, setup greater than power icon. One's two for setup.
Because we also have the option, if we're really afraid of power icons, we can run the power attachment, which is also good for setup.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is free.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah.
Stick these attachments in. They're great for setup.
And you can live the Jamie dream of Jamie with one of those icons.
Pycelle?
Two?
Definitely Pycelle. Are we sticking strictly to characters, or since we just had that discussion, do we throw in a Casterly Rock and a Wheelhouse?
Let's say characters, and let's stay on that character.
Okay.
So I have a rule of thumb for characters that I don't know if you guys agree with. But Targaryen is everywhere, which means that Targaryen location is everywhere. So if the card is, unless I have Recursion, which is one house, but if the card is unique and it only has two strength, I only run one house.
Reasonable.
That seems fair.
I think the exception to that is, what's his name? Milk of the Poppy Eating Boy?
Mr. Crescent?
Yeah.
And isn't he three strength?
Is he?
Yes.
He might be.
He is.
So, and, like, you're not using him in challenges at that point anyway. He's just there to, like, get rid of Milk of the Poppy. So.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be running Joffrey, but I'm willing to listen if you guys think we should.
The question is what Lannister event package do we want? Do we want treachery and things I do for love? If we do, we need Joffrey. If we don't, then...
Three Cersei, three Tywin, three Tyrion, almost certainly. Like, we should not need Joffrey for that. And we have the ticket.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning anti-Joff at this point.
Yeah. I'm good with ditching Joff.
Three merchant, no money.
Yep.
We're all okay with no money lender.
Oh, no, sorry, I didn't hear that. I don't know. part of that's going to depend what we do resource location wise, but I really most of the time feel like you need to be running at least two of them if you're bothering with Lannister, especially as a main house.
Can we stick them in the maybe pile?
How many characters do we have right now, Aaron?
23.
Yeah. We're going to end up cutting them unless we're running taxation. Like, because we need the zero drops for the Tywin setup. The Tywin setup is the platonic ideal of all that.
The dream.
Ideally with a dupe, with a one-cost weenie, which is why you run three Targ loyalists. With a one-cost weenie and a zero-cost location. And then you're just like, oh, I just won this game. That's so convenient.
The Targ loyalists also have the power icon, so line it up. Okay. I mean, I guess I'm fine with leaving them on the maybe pile for now.
We can come back and add them. Jamie, one or two?
Two.
I'm leaning toward...
Two.
Okay. I can be tucked into two.
Yeah, we'll end up cutting down to one. I'm almost certain. The Hound, two or three?
Let's start with three.
Man,
my heart
I don't know.
Three, because he's just the new and shiny in me.
He's the best.
I feel like just two.
He might be the best. Let's start with three and we'll cut down. Queen's Assassin, I would argue three because we're going to be winning a bunch of streak, apparently.
Yeah, I was going to say, if this is the direction we're going with the deck, I think we need to embrace that.
And they're good for setup. All right, three Tyrion, three Tyrion, one Tickler. Yes?
What do we have character count now?
38, and then we have to add neutral. So we're going to have three characters.
We're going to have to trim down, but
so
we'll see. Yes.
We'll do neutrals after we do Lannister cards, yes?
Yeah, so on to Lannister locations, probably.
Sure, I'm okay with that. One Casterly, two Lannisport.
Yes. Lannisport's the draw one?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
And then
one Wheelhouse.
And two Fiefdoms.
If we're not going to run the money lenders, then yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's our six Lannister locations. Attachments?
One Widow's Wheel or two?
For this deck, I would probably go up to two if we need that strength boost.
I mean, it's not...
On the power icon, is what I'm thinking.
It is protection versus Greyjoy. The kill is choose a character without attachments, the Seastone Chair.
It also protects against Dracarys. You can ambush it on to Cersei before you put her in a challenge so that she can't be Dracarys.
Yeah, that works.
Yep.
Great. Three Treachery, certainly, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we're going to be running Things I Do, but actually we should run Things I Do if we're going to win.
Yeah. If we're really looking at hitting their hand on the intrigue, like, we can worry a little less about when they draw if we're sending stuff back to their hand to be discarded.
Two or three.
Ah, man. Okay, here's the thing. If we really want to push the intrigue thing, I lean toward three, but if we do that, I feel like we need to go back and add a Joff.
Why?
You have to have a Lannister Lord or Lady in particular.
Three Cersei, three Tyrion, three Tywin, and two Jaime.
Okay, that's fair. That is more copies of Tywin and Cersei than I'm normally running, so...
And they usually, if you remember, they stay on the board much more so than first ed. Like, that's something I try to reevaluate as a first ed player, is how many of a trait or how many of a qualifier I need. And characters are, especially good ones, are much more persistent.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah, we can get one of those to stick pretty easily. And then... At that point, if we've got the Lannister or the Cersei train rolling, Things I Do for Love looks like some pretty solid removal. Even if we're just bouncing one of the reducer characters and we're able to strip it out of their hand, that's pretty decent.
And it helps with the power by five if you can send their icons back.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. And people aren't running Hand's Judgment as much as I thought they would. So.
Right. Yeah, I didn't run into it at all on our play day on Saturday, which was kind of hilarious.
On to neutrals.
Yeah, I think so. Neutral, we starting characters again?
I don't care for Littlefinger.
We have more than enough draw.
Yeah, it's a very expensive deck.
Gold. I think
more
three Varys.
I mean, what draw do we have?
We have Lannisport. We have the...
Two Lannisports.
We have the Maester, and we have the Wheelhouse.
And the Wheelhouse. I forgot to count the Wheelhouse.
We'll probably run either Summons or 3-3-1, counting.
Okay.
I think we went Summons in this deck, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. I tend to run both, but whatever. Varys times three, Rattleshirt Raider. Any one or two.
That's the attachment one?
Yeah.
It's putting us up at 41 characters.
I've already made a bunch. Don't worry about that.
I'd say one.
Yeah.
42 characters altogether so far.
No hordes.
Yep. That just pushed us up. Yeah, no hordes.
Right. Attachment?
Do we want noble lineage?
No.
No?
I think in the end where we are right now, we're okay without it.
That would be something I would add as a meta call. Like, if you start playing games and feel you can't, like, it's more detrimental than we think, but my gut first blush says it's fine.
Yeah.
Two milk or no milk?
Two milk.
Two. I'm not sure I can build a deck without two right now.
Oh, I do all the time. Okay. Locations?
Just the King's Road. Sorry,
are there any more attachments? Any more attachments we want to look at? I vote no bodyguard.
No. Yeah.
No bodyguard.
I'm good without the bodyguards.
Are we running Seal? Seal on Tywin wins game.
And we do have two sweet targets for it. Three.
Yeah.
Four.
Alternatively, Cersei's great. What else were you thinking, Roy?
I'm scrolling down to see where is... Illyrio is the Lord, too, if we need to.
Yeah. I mean, Tyrion even isn't bad to use that stealth in two challenges.
Yeah, double stealth is good. Putting on Jaime so he can defend and do his thing, or get both. I mean, there's so many juicy targets. I like it.
Okay. I mean, do we go crazy and drop milk and sub in Seal?
Just one milk?
I say we could do one. We can do both, or we could do one of each.
Two and two.
Oof. Seems
feel good. One.
I mean, that puts
it. One's a waste.
Just pointing out, if we do two seals, then that puts us at 60 cards for where we are. Not that we aren't going to continue going and then trim down from there, but just
42 characters. We're cutting at least 8 characters.
Yeah. Just so people are kind of aware as we're going. I mean, I guess we could always throw two in and then kind of talk about it at once we finish running through.
King's Road, Rose Road.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Three each, and I think that's all we need, right?
Yeah, but we need to
get set on the Iron Throne or
yeah, the location.
Four Street Sisters.
All right, and now we're on events.
Yep.
Tiers and support, right?
Are we doing three of each of them?
Two tiers, two support, two sword.
I'd be like two sword. With James and Tywin.
I do want to point out, looking at our icon spread, our military icon is the lightest. Only 23.9% of our icons are military.
Yeah, but Tywin or the Hound alone will usually get you the military.
Yeah, or and Jamie. I mean, it's just where they're at, I think.
I mean,
on big strength
winning by five. I'm just pointing out, early on, Aaron made this terrified argument about being able to win power by five. And now I also want to point out he's saying that's easy peasy thanks to certain characters that also have power
because
icons.
Because you want to use them.
Thus meaning it should be easy peasy to play support of the people off of them. But there are also far less of the military icons than there are the power. Power icons right now, there are 36.6%.
You're ridiculous.
You know, you definitely should have waited for me to finish my statement like I waited for you earlier.
Yes, Kiso kills me.
Peace, love, and rock and roll, everybody.
So killing
me. I love that as host, Will's voice just dominates over the top. Like, you caught not a word that Aaron said. I have no clue.
Actually, little technological side note, that is a Skype feature. It's called ducking.
Okay.
Really?
You were just ducking, like, Aaron.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's annoying for people that do podcasts. Sorry for the aside here, listeners. But basically, it's a volume control thing that Skype does where if one person's already talking, it ducks the audio of other people down to a lower level.
Interesting. The more you know.
Yep.
All right. So you can't afford to overcommit to power early because it doesn't affect the board. You can't afford to just go, I don't care about board state, turn one and turn two, and throw a bunch into power unless you already have a crazy board. If you already have a crazy board, you're probably winning anyway.
You're not going crazy and throwing extra stuff into it unless you specifically have an effect that you need to trigger that is going to alter the board state somehow.
And I think, at least to me, the advantage of Support of the People and to a lesser extent Shoot of the Sisters in Taking the Black is it does value the power challenge earlier in the game in the sense that, you know, the ability to get Lannis, you know, first turn winning, you know, a five strength power challenge, getting Lannis poured out, or for our strategy, Casterly Rock, you know, that's a big tempo increase, even if we're not necessarily hitting them with a put to the sword that other decks may want to do.
Literally compare that mentally for 1 second to the idea of winning a military by five or more turn one and putting, for argument's sake, not even like Balon, putting Theon to the sword. Like, if you give me a choice between dead Theon or even dead, like, Damp Hair turn one with a put to the sword or getting Casterly Rock or Lannis poured out, I'm doing the put to the sword.
Not to quote a meme, but why not both?
I also,
I mean, honestly, what I would lean toward is probably two of each, but I just found the logical dissonance in those arguments to be horrifying.
Board position is significantly more important than almost anything else.
Sure. That wasn't the argument that you were making,
that
though.
That is the argument, because...
It is the argument you are now
No, because
making,
you can...
But it's not what you left.
Where you're overcommitting, you ignored part of it.
Or we could just win an intrigue challenge, use Tears of Lys, and then overspend our resources on a power challenge to get a location that we want. I mean, the nice thing about the way that we're building the deck so far is that we don't necessarily need to rely on Put to the Sword. We could rely on Tears plus the pressure from our intrigue challenges to keep the board under control. Now, that may not be a successful strategy, but it's something that, at least right now, looking at the way we're building the deck, it's leaning more towards. But I'm not all again
and
opposed.
And the way we're planning, so the things I do for love helps with that as well.
I want at least one die by the sword, or sorry, put to the sword. I mean,
yeah,
there are too many intrigue icon targets that I desperately want to hit. That and comboing it, leveraging your high gold. That I mean, Lannister can count such silly amounts in challenges phase turns 3, 4, and 5. That you can get in a position where you can initiate the military, bounce their defender, and then put to the sword. I mean, that's the dream.
And
I mean, if we're gonna run things I do for love, let's leverage it as best we can.
A lot of what Jamie reads is add 5 strength to every military challenge you initiate.
Everyone you initiate.
That's what I said.
I thought you just said initiated. My bad.
Everyone you initiate. So like, he's an automatic just +5 that's in every military challenge you initiate, as long as you end up being first. And apparently,
unless he gets milked, let's be honest, he is almost always instantly milked, right?
No, I mean, I love
well,
him.
Well, we're leveraging Cersei, and you have Tyrion or Tywin out. It does go elsewhere.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
I would love it if you milk Jaime and I have Tyrion or Tywin out, I am so freaking happy. Like, every time someone does that, I'm like, oh, God, I think I just won this game.
I mean, Lannister is very similar to Greyjoy in that sense, that all of their, you know, family characters make sense to be milked. There's arguments for all of them, which is what makes the houses so strong. It's not like, say, Martell or Targ, or Night's Watch, which is even more nightmarish. You know, milk is almost a dead card in that matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Or Baera, right? There's exactly, what, 2 characters you want to milk?
Three.
Four. I guess Stan.
5.
I mean, there's one you have to milk first,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, Tell Bob or Stannis.
No. You have to milk Crescent first. Right. Otherwise, he just discards the milk.
So you milk Crescent, then you milk Mel or Bob. You should probably milk Stannis. You could stand to milk Davos. Like, there's
I mean, there's a correlation there, right? I mean, the stronger houses are the ones that have multiple targets, which implies they have multiple strong instant-like characters, like Roy's saying.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's just,
But I believe in being flexible, and pigeonholing ourselves in one way to go probably isn't the best call. I think Will's idea of going 2-2-2 with the events is the right call.
And then also, your opponent never is sure which one they need to be worried about the response coming off of.
I mean, you just play the bluff game because you're Lannister and you always have gold because it's here.
Yeah.
Yep. Then you get those dream scenarios where you do the military, then you die by the sword, then you tears. I mean, 3 gold gets you 3 characters off the board.
Yep.
Okay, so this is, I suppose, the peril of deck building by committee. Is everyone, if not happy, at least not going to murder anyone else over having the 2-2-2 split?
No, I think we came to that, right? Or
yeah, I mean,
I think it's playtest worthy. I think it's the right place to start for playtesting.
At that point, okay. I feel like things I do can go down one, but more or less.
See, I liked it at 3. I think things I do for love helps me leverage those events, because those events I think are what flips games outside of Varys, and things I do for love even more so mucks up challenge math and can help with that. And force, I mean, even if you don't have the die by the sword being, or put to the sword, I'm gonna do that for the entire life of this game. being able to make that military challenge count a little bit by if you're just popping back a reducer guy. I think I like it at 3. I really do. Until Stan's Judgment gets played more.
It's the easiest to cancel, and it is the most expensive, usually.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always liked it, like having one in my hand. Let's say I'm sitting on 4 gold.
One more thing, and it's the hardest to trigger because you need to.
The hardest to trigger is probably, I think, the biggest knock against it. I think as far as the expense goes, I mean, part of the question is what use are we putting it to? I mean, it's a flexible card, but in general, is the game plan going to be to knock out a, you know, 4 cost or higher, like defender to help push our challenge through? Or is the game plan to muck with some of that lower cost stuff? Well, also, if we are doing some of that lower cost stuff, looking forward to plots, I wouldn't turn down at least one March the Wall. Yeah. There might be an argument for two.
But it can be both. That's the nice thing about the card, is it can do either, like depending on what the situation dictates. If you're in a position where you can sit on 4 or 5 gold, send mel back to their hand, and then intrigue her away, or if you're in a position where you need to make the military count because it's a Chud and Bob, and you can get to him, like there are different avenues, and the card lets you do that. And I've always thought it's a great, like, worst-case scenario backup consolidation card, where let's say I'm sitting on 3 gold, and it's like, okay, well, they overcommit, so I can't win to use my put to the sword, and they sell out on blocking my intrigue, so I can't tears. Well, at minimum, I can send so-and-so back and give them for intrigue claim, or send them back so you can say you can march to the wall. Like, it's great knowing you're at least going to get some effect out of your gold, so you don't save 4 gold in challenges for effects that they sell out and block so you can't cancel. We just talked about a defense deck earlier. Like, I think Things I Do for Love is a great way to get around some of those Chud blocks.
All right, so ready to do cuts?
Do we want to go ahead and do cuts now, or would it be best to kind of get a rough idea of plots before we start cutting and kind of have some of those synergies more in mind as well?
Well, how close are we? What are we at card count-wise? Like, how?
72, I think.
Okay, so yes, so what we end up with and what we have are moderately different things.
I would use just a few cards now.
I agree. Okay, so let's go to Lannister characters first, I guess.
Well, just look at all our characters. So, 2 burned men, do we need them?
What is our other low-curve stuff?
The dragons, the handmaiden, Pycelle, the tickler, Queen's Assassin, Jorah, the loyalists, and then the one-drops. We have a lot of low-curve stuff.
Okay. Then
what ambush, did we keep any, if we cut them, do we have any ambush characters?
Yeah, Hound.
The Hound.
Yeah, just the Hound. They do cut our military icon presence even further, though, which make, while I'm not arguing against Jaime and Tywin doing work and whatnot, but it does make it harder to ensure that we can leverage that as fast as possible.
So let's go down to 1 for now, because we're really short on it. We have way too many cards. Is that okay?
Yeah, for now.
Okay.
All right. Cersei stays at 3 because Drogon stays. Pycelle stays. Can we go down to 2 handmaidens because 3 is a little crazy?
Can you read her again? I just don't have her in front of me.
Action. Sacrifice handmaiden to choose and stand a lady character. So it has to specifically be a lady.
And it's a 2 for 1 and it only works with 1 card in the deck.
Yeah. I'm good with going down to 2.
Merchant stay. Can we go down to 2 Illyrio?
That's what I was kind of thinking about. That put us at exactly 12 targ cards, right?
Yes.
How many drawers are we running? 2 or 3?
2.
Okay. Then I would say go down to 2 Illyrios.
Yeah. Let's double check our card count. 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yep. I think that's the right call. Okay. So we can't cut.
Sounds good there.
Rattle Church. We keeping it?
Yeah.
We need the icon.
Targets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jamie, 1 or 2?
2.
Wait, that we cut or that we keep?
We have 2. Do we keep 2?
Okay, sorry. For some reason, I was thinking 3. I was trying to find him in the list.
I just ignored card cards because we're not...
I feel like as low as we are on military icons, we keep the 2 Jamies.
Okay. We go down to 2 Hound then. Gotta cut somewhere.
Yes. I know. He's
we
so
do. Cool. I'm leaning toward... And this one may sound crazy, even with the direction we were kind of pushing the deck in general, I'm leaning towards cutting one of the Queen's Assassins.
Yeah, 100%. Oh. We're definitely. Yeah. So we were only ever going to run 2 of. 3 was just a nice idea.
I go 2 Hound, 2 Queen's Assassins.
Yeah, if you're still at frickin' 37 characters, and we have at least 2 more to cut. So we're now in the painful cut territory.
67 cards total, 37 characters.
Two. Can we cut the Burnman now?
The last one?
You're at 67. Yeah. Like, you're at 37 characters.
And you can ambush. You have the Hound. You can ambush. So we have 4 ambush character cards at this point. After if we cut the Burnmen.
Yep.
Yeah. And then 2 ambush attachments.
Yeah.
So 3 Varys. Can we cut a Varys?
I'm wondering if we can afford to cut a Varys. We're probably looking at least 1 summons for the deck.
Like, we're pretty dupe heavy. I'd love leveraging that against an opponent.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of targeted control effects that can make whatever stands after him do some work. Oh, I really want him at 3, but this is...
Like Aaron said, it's time to get into the hard cuts.
Right. I mean, the question is, how much are we prioritizing setting up our draw engine? Like, is Lannisport or the Wheelhouse or Pycelle something that we are mulliganing for? If we are, then I would say go down to 2. But if we're not sure that we're reliably going to be able to set up our draw engine, then we need 3 Varus in case we fall behind.
I think 3 Varus can be good just because there are going to be times where they drop a godflop and you have to pull a ripcord real quick.
So here's the thing that you don't, well, that I hate saying. I don't know if you guys hate hearing it, but I absolutely hate saying it. This deck likes Wildfire.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't hate saying it. I think I'm with you there, or with you that the deck likes.
Good, then we should have at most 4 heavy multiples of uniques that we're going to want to keep on the board. So that would be Cersei, Tywin, Tyrion, Jaime.
So 2 Varuses?
I think 2 is fine, then. If we're going to run Wildfire, then yeah, I think 2 is okay.
Wildfire gives us a stopgap, I suppose, if nothing else, until we draw a Varus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, down to 36 characters, 66 cards.
I'd almost sit at 36 for now and see if we can find a less painful...
Oh, whoops, sorry. I didn't cut the burn man in the end.
35 is the right number, I think.
That all seems right, about so right to me.
There we go. Yep.
We'll be cutting milk or seal?
Milk.
I think milk.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're running a lot of removal, and so I think we have a lot more character control than we need milk for.
Agreed. Locations, we can't cut any.
Yeah.
No.
And we're on to events, because we have... All right, I run at 61. Are you guys happy with 61, or are you making a 60-card deck?
I mean, I'd honestly probably be happy with 62, but...
We're in playtesting range. I mean, you're not going to take this raw dog into a tournament, but I think you're in the ballpark, at least, of what you want to do, and enough that you're true to what you want. You have it close enough to the idea that you can go test its viability. I think this is a point where, as a playtester, I would stop and take it to my weekly tournament and see how it did.
I wouldn't.
Well... Sort of. We do still need to figure out plots.
Plots would help. Plots would help.
So, I mean, maybe we can go ahead and take a look at plots and then see if something else clicks.
We are in shooting distance of where we want to be anyway. So, yeah, plots I think it's time to go to.
So, I do something mildly different in playtesting. What I'll do when I'm playtesting is I will identify the 2 or 3 cards that could be either or cards. I get down to either 60 or 61, knowing me, usually 61. And those last, usually, 2 cards, I treat as blank cards, and when I draw them, they're whatever I want them to.
Same.
I've done that with plots. I've never done that with draw cards. That's interesting.
Totally. Only you can only really do it if there's like 2 things, like if you're torn on 2 restricteds, or it doesn't work in a pool of 5 kind of setting. But like if we're, like Aaron said, an either or, I find it's really effective.
Mm-hmm. Like we're deciding
the talent or notes.
So are we on plots?
Yeah.
I think so.
So we're running.
Yeah, we know for sure we want 1 Wildfire, 1 Summons, and 1 Marched, right?
And 1 Noble Cause.
Yeah.
And 1 Noble Cause.
And 1 Game of Thrones.
No.
We don't want a Game of Thrones with the amount of intrigue we have?
Stick with things you must have before things you might like, depending on the situation.
I like accounting coppers in there.
Yep.
It's because we have so much gold that you don't have to worry about it.
The confiscation and the counting coppers. And then we have
confiscation. Yeah.
And confiscation.
Now we have 1 plot, and we only have 1-5 plot.
Double 1 of the existing ones? Nope.
Can we run through that list one more time? Just it kind of came sporadically.
Okay. First, Noble Cause. Any arguments given that we have 18 lords and ladies?
Nope.
Okay. I think 18 was hyperbole, but it's not that far from that.
Yeah. We've got a boatload.
Confiscation has to be there. I don't think anyone's arguing, right?
Yep.
Counting coppers?
Yep.
Summons?
Uh-huh.
March?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wildfire?
Yep.
Yep.
So those 6 are guaranteed. So I'm going to present an argument. My argument is we need at least a 5 gold plot, potentially more.
Calling the banners?
Calling the banners is an option, as is...
Since what I had highlighted, was it you, Aaron, that had made the Varus turn argument to me a few weeks back?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think this deck wants that pretty well.
I'm not against
it. It's a good counter to a bad scenario. If you're at the point where they're up on character count, this helps you get some of your smash guys out so you can drop a Wildfire or get some dudes out with some dupes so you can Varus. I think that's a good plot to counter when the game's not going according to script.
Which is why, as much as I like a Game of Thrones, it ends up, if you like run Wildfire, it's very hard to run it. I'm also not anti-Kamel the Westeros in this deck, in that particularly If you get that turn one Varus, it's really good to protect him. And a lot of people remember still, like, this deck at this point is almost certainly opening Noble Cause, right? Like, it's our only real opener besides Marched, I guess.
Unless it's like a weak flop, and then you might drop Calling the Banners if you're worried they're going to Naval Superiority you first turn.
I mean, I could even see a summons depending on how, like,
but Naval's
or still wrecked things buttons. Went for you.
And
what's that?
If you open summons, A, Naval Superiority wrecks it, and B, if they open Sneak Attack, you had slightly less gold, so you're more likely to take it on the chin.
Yeah.
So I'm going to suggest instead of calling a Calm Over Westeros, so we have that protected plot to open with.
That's not a bad decision. May I offer an insane suggestion that no one that you guys are welcome to shoot down? Does this deck want to run Here to Serve to fish out Pycelle on demand if you need a draw engine? Something to open with if we don't think we're going to be Naval Superiority'd, and if we, you know, if you get the dream setup of Tywin X and then a Chud, and then you go into Here to Serve, you have a Tricon, Chud, and a draw engine.
You can't.
I mean, even if you do get hit with Naval Superiority, Here to Serve, I think, is one of the plots I mind that on the least. And I did think about it early, but the fact that we literally only have one copy of one target in the whole deck turns me off.
Yeah, if you draw it, you just have a good plot. It's not worthwhile.
Yeah.
There are other good plots. It's just I don't know if any of them have the gold we need.
Yeah, we could do. We need another econ plot. I'd like to run one of the ones that can't be navaled, because they're going to see Lannister as our house and they're going to lick their chops that you're dropping Noble Cause first turn.
I mean, yep.
Another mad suggestion. Heads on spikes.
No.
Since no.
Oh, man, I do love head, and if we heads, that is. You know, the first one was true also. And if we are running the things I do for love, that can potentially be very handy together.
Could you do me a favor, Will, and look down and tell Kristen we said hi?
Thank goodness this isn't a video cast.
So, once again, if your Noble Cause gets hit with Naval Superiority, even if you're not playing it turn one, if you're playing someone good and your Noble Cause gets hit with something bad, you have just lost the game if you are not running the second high gold plot. If you want to cut Counting Coppers, that's fine. I don't agree, but that's fine. But to then run no other five or higher gold plot and to have no other potential open is frightening, and you're never opening with heads on spikes under any chance. That is a bad player move.
Oh, I agree that opening heads is a mistake, particularly with this deck.
What are you opening with? Give me potential opens for this deck.
Yeah, again, that's the problem.
This is literally going to open.
Yeah.
And they'll know that. And if I'm playing against Lannister, I'm dropping Naval Superiority almost 9 times out of 10 first turn, especially if we don't get to drop. If we don't get a situation where we can drop one of our big lords, either Jaime or Tywin or Tyrion, then I as a player almost have to drop Noble Cause and or summons, and they're for sure going to enable it.
Oh, I 100% agree that Calm Over Westeros is a plot that we want. Is the seventh plot here? But not only for the goal, but also because the way our icon spread is, we could easily end up on a first turn where we don't set up any military icons, and being able to only have to eat one claim if they open with a sneak attack or a Winds of Winter is great. I am actually skeptical of Counting Coppers in this deck. We have the gold to overcome it, but we also have enough native draw that I'm not so much worried about not having cards in our hand and really needing to refill our hand. And the initiative is really nice, but I think that two gold, you know, it's not as impactful as much as we would want, and something like Heads on Spikes that we can combo with so many other of the cards that we have in our deck, whittle them down to they're just holding one key character that they want, or we a character we bounce, or, you know, a two-claim plot like Winds of Winter as a closer could be something we would want instead of that card. I think
There's four draw cards in the deck now. Four. I mean, if you want to count Support of the People, six. Like,
yeah, I'd probably count it as extra copies, but yeah, that's still...
Okay.
Doesn't feel like a ton of draw, you know,
coming
still off a first ed.
What happens when you're running three Golden Tooth Mines and you just don't see them, right?
It's true.
It happens.
Like, it happens often. It's not like it's an unlikely thing if that's your only draw. It's that you're running, and this is first edition talk, I know, but it's that you're running then Toman and Janos and the Mander and this and that on top of it, and it's all just redundancy. And four cards is not redundant. Four cards is more than a lot of houses have, but if we're trying to leverage us drawing a lot and them not drawing, then we need to draw a lot. Or them not having the opportunity to like keep things in hand. We need to actually draw a lot.
Okay.
We can cut counting, but if we're cutting counting, then it should be for either the search for locations, building orders, or it should be for a second summon.
Yeah.
Because then
them as summons.
What?
That's just me.
What'd you say? I didn't hear you say.
So I think I would rather have counting than another summon.
I agree. Just
the high reserve kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
But this it is. A situation where you, like, I would create, like, a sideboard of plots, and like Will says, sometimes you just have to play the games and see if it flows how you think it will. Because how we see this playing out, now it could, in actuality, it could be very different things. Or it could play out very differently when you're playing Greyjoy, and if you're going to a tournament that you know is going to be Greyjoy heavy, that's a meta call.
So there's this potential shitty situation. We're running 12 events and 2 seal of the hand, where after your drawback, you're just like, oh my god, I have nothing to play, right? Like, it doesn't happen often, but it's a thing that could happen. I want the option to count in coppers and then just take it on the chin for a turn.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
And it does happen.
Yeah, it does. Like, more than you'd like. It's a part of the problem with all the economy being limited and such.
Yeah. Limited sucks.
I do miss the old streets.
Yeah.
I mean,
the old streets.
In fairness, sans Wildfire, this is my plot deck for New York.
Okay.
Like, the other 6 are plots I'm running. I don't even remember what the 7th is off the top of my head.
Well, now.
All right. Well, in that case, I mean, do we feel pretty good then and about where the deck is as far as saying, you know what, we've done all we can do to it now before actually running it through games?
Nope. Need to cut.
What do we need to cut? We're at 61 cards.
We're at 63 cards, sir.
We're at 63.
We need to cut at least one card.
It's generally where I would probably feel okay testing it. I would probably feel better cutting one to make it 62 so it's an even number and my head doesn't hurt.
Two things I do for love.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. It hurts me to do it, I think...
Are we running treachery?
Yeah, 3.
Yes.
Do we want to go down to 2 treacheries, 2
no.
things I do for love?
No,
we keep the 3 treacheries.
we've got.
You can just win the game. Treachering a king's row turn 1 is hilarious. Sad,
and it's sad how much that decides things.
Treachering Varus just wins the game right there.
Oh, yeah,
that's true.
It does as well.
Like, true. I've treachered. You can treachery a Mel at a key point. Like, there's a million things that matter.
Even just keeping an Asha Neld can sometimes shape a game.
Almost anything that stands, right? Like treachering a seal, treachering the
Ghasting Grey.
Yeah. There's too many potential things to treachery for that to be a real.
Yeah.
I know what my cut is. I'm not cutting it, but I know what my cut is.
So we cut one.
What's
thing,
your cut, Aaron?
Go down to 62.
Cast Blue Rock.
No.
You can keep it if you want. It's just I know that like if I tested this deck, I'd be like, there's one card in here that I don't feel does enough.
At this point, and with it being such a weird. Not weird build. I mean, this isn't a crazy idea. Let's make intrigue pound home. Like, that's not insane, but it flows very differently and has different objectives than a lot of the things I've built. So at this point, I would keep things more open and probably play test just because we could be very wrong on how it flows, how it handles things. If the intrigue's, if it's hitting too home, like where you're sacrificing too much in other areas, it's not rounded enough, or if it needs even more punch. So I would call it a day here.
Yeah, I could deal with that. My concern is I feel like adding the Casterly, like you're gonna have to have a lot of gold to want to play Casterly, right? And if you're choosing which to search with Support of the People, unless you've already played Lannisport's still the choice. Like, I can't imagine a real situation where I'm ever gonna go, you know what? I'm going to go get Castle Rock instead of Lannisport. And then unless I have a ton of gold, I'm not especially happy about things. Like, right, I don't want to top deck cast.
I mean,
and if I have a ton of gold, I'm ahead.
Hopefully.
Almost always.
I agree, particularly that you don't want to top deck Castle Rock, but it is only 2 costs. And the second thing is also, I can easily think of a situation. If you have the Cersei combo set up, or you even have Tywin with Seal of the Hand on him, that is a situation where, yes, I would go get Castle Rock.
I wouldn't, because I'm not doing it. Like, I'm probably not going to do a second intrigue with Tywin if I have Seal. I'm going to do a military and a power. It's just, I still truly believe that in most situations, maybe like in ideal situations where I have things I do for love also, and I'm going to bounce them in the hand, or I know they have a put to the sword and I'm going first. Like, there's definitely situations. But even then, like, Tywin's such a power enemy, right? Like, we don't have a lot of military icons, and he's going to be the best way to win power challenges. Well, a lot of people can win interest. And if we have a big hand, I care significantly less about losing.
I don't know. I don't think getting an additional challenge can be understated. I think that was just resting on my laurels a little bit. That is always an underrated effect.
So it has one especially good use right now that might warrant like the reason to run it, but it's extraordinarily good against Night's Watch.
Yeah. And you can play two tiers of lists is limit per challenge, right?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, if you, for some reason, draw into two, like, I don't know. I find myself where it is, like we talked earlier about tougher to flip games. I try to imagine scenarios that would flip a game. Bomb turn, manufacture with reasonable confidence. And getting two intrigues off with Cersei, so you're doing like four claim to rip out their hand, or being able to play two tiers, getting to do. Those are high-impact turns that can help turn a game for you. And so for two gold for the possibility to do that, I like it.
Did you watch the world stream?
Not all of it. I was there.
Right, right, right. Did you see Kid's game that he ended up losing to the Greyjoy deck?
I did not.
Okay. Like, Kid was behind the entire game. Like, Kid was getting functionally killed. I don't know if any of you saw this, but, like, trust me, we all watched. Like, everyone on Earth was watching and discussing. Kid was getting killed until you look up and realize that he's, like, too powerful winning. There's, like, it's very possible by controlling power challenges and being patient to win a game where you feel behind, where your presence is behind, because renown just sticks on the board.
The lack of valor makes that much more reliable than it used to be.
Like, if you were really behind a board position before and you had a bunch of renown, your guy was just going to get Valar'd away, and, like, your power was dead and useless function. Like, it was there, but it didn't especially count. Nowadays, unless they have that removal, and removal is king, much like draft, cannot be stated enough, right? Like, unless they have that removal, that's untouchable power.
Mm-hmm.
So you can legitimately just win by doing that.
Yeah. Happened to me in a game against Corey over the weekend. I felt overall like I was just crushing him in challenges and effects left and right. But I couldn't defend the power challenges, and that and a little bit of renown got him there, and I just couldn't find a way to specifically stop that.
Well, I mean,
the counter that, Kid lost that game, right?
Kid lost that game by a misplay. He actually should have won. Like, and he knows it. He said it. He didn't win because he miscounted something. Like, if he had counted right, he wins the period.
But the other guy, despite all that, was within a misplay of winning. That's all I'm saying.
Right. I mean,
it's not like he came back and crushed that game. It's not like he you can do it. Like it.
Yeah, you don't get bonus points for crushing. Like, it's win or lose. And like,
but he got back. He didn't win.
But yeah, that's a misplay. But despite being badly behind in board position and present the entire game, he could have and should have won almost entirely on careful use of power challenge. And carefully.
I'd rather be in a situation where I have control and I can try and negate that as best I can than to be rifled into that scenario.
We're discussing playing from behind and how it's so hard. But it's going to happen in some games, like especially considering how high variance the game is right now. You're going to find yourself behind, so you need options.
Okay, I think there's two points here that I want to make. One, I watched that Kid versus Patrick game live, and I think it was actually a much more interesting game than Aaron is giving credit for, but actually hammers home his point, because the fact that Patrick won was also Patrick's own use of power challenges and trying to leverage them. When he did see what Kid was capable of doing, the reason why it was just one misplay away from Kid winning was because both players were managing their power challenges really, really well. And that was, and I watched Patrick with that Greyjoy deck do the exact same thing. There were games where a Greyjoy deck fell behind, a Greyjoy fealty deck fell behind, but he was able to pull it out because he was able to manage the power challenges. Now, the question for the deck that we're building here, and that's what I want to bring the conversation towards, is can the deck as we built it now do that? Can it leverage power challenges? Can it play from behind? And, I mean, this started with the discussion of Casterly Rock. Is Casterly Rock the kind of card that can help us, not necessarily from top decking, but if we get it into play through support of the people or another way, is it the kind of card that opens up opportunities for us to come back?
I think it does somewhat. Not necessarily so much from the strength of the intrigue challenge, but it depends maybe on how far back we are. If we at least have bodies, then that extra challenge opens up a lot of capabilities with chumping and either getting, you know, some more of their effective strength or icons out of the way or earning us power through unopposed. If we are so far down that we don't have the bodies to work with that, well, we already lost.
Path to victory is what's important, and there's two different paths to victory. The first is your standard Lannister path, which is like get Tywin on the board, make so they can't do shit, win, right? Like that's the easy way to do it. The other way and the other option that Castle Rock helps open up, I don't know if it's necessary because I don't know if there's enough draw, and I feel like Cersei at 3 does the same basic job. But the other real option is you don't if you don't see those big guys, you don't worry as much about board presence. You take your time getting your big guys out, you try and draw, and you make sure they have no hand, so that when you either Varys or Wildfire, you are then allowed the ability to play the crap out of a bunch of cards, while they will be just playing whatever they happen to time.
Sure.
So just to be clear, Aaron, you think that the deck, as we built it right here, has both of those options available to it?
I think it has both of those options. I worry because I'm on record for this. I don't think Wildfire is especially. I think relying on Wildfire is worrisome because if anything goes wrong, if you're playing a deck that keeps Cersei melt, if you were playing as another Lannister deck that's capable of defending, there's like enough options where you don't, that second option is troubling, where I think that I'm not sure if that's the perfect.
Well, do we want to cut Wildfire for another plot and then go to 3 Varuses to give us
If you're going to leverage
another out,
something to make them pay for it, and hoping you draw Varys isn't something to make them pay for it.
Okay.
I like the on-demand reset a lot.
Yeah.
The closest option would be to drop in another summons and go up to the 3rd Varys, but I don't know.
Right. Like, I think this deck, probably with a few changes in the number of uniques, is T1-ish once we have the right reset. I think the lack of the reset is my big concern about how effective it is. Because you better have 3 better characters and be ready to flood right after you want them. Because if you give them any time to recover, then that power that you can't get off the board, that renown that you couldn't get off the board, is going to cost you.
I definitely agree. I mean, this is the deck. Oh, go ahead, Kyle.
No, that was my one.
Oh. I definitely think this is a deck that's begging for Valor, or the Aftermath would be great for this deck, or something else that allows us to leverage our hand destruction better. But I do think that this deck can very easily force an opponent into top decking in a way that I think it will be frustrating for the way in which many decks that I've been playing against recently, which tend to be a little bit more on the aggro-y, that tend to be a little bit more on the mini curve as Aaron describes it, that tends to want to, you know, have much more resources at its command than this deck really allows them to have.
2.0.
You know.
Thank God, Will.
Oh, well, I was actually going to suggest that, like, if we've hit a point in the discussion where we've pretty much laid out the game plans, the kind of best case scenarios, kind of said when we want to see a couple different things play out, and then we've delved into, well, wouldn't it be great if we had this from First Ed, or, man, this deck would be better from First Ed. Like, I think we've kind of hit the end of the pertinent discussion of this deck in the second edition meta, haven't we?
No. So I think this is an important deck building point. 2.0, much, much more than 1.0 ever was, is almost like rewards you for thinking like DC would. Rewards you for that 60-card deck instead of that 61-card deck or 62-card deck. It rewards you for only running those cards that you want to see when things are going badly, because with the high variance, things are much more likely to be going badly. You don't have the same draw, you don't have the same redundancy. So my concern is that this deck takes a different track and gives up a little efficiency for a different strategy, and I feel like that is concerning.
But that's the point. I mean, that's what we have to see with playtesting is if, I mean, we're consciously are, when we set out to do this, looking at a road less traveled to see if the gains we make up for that lack of efficiency, either between surprising a meta by taking a different approach or by just leveraging those intrigue challenges that people aren't really concerned about at the moment. I mean, there was a very conscious, we're going to lose. We know what we're losing. We can, on some level, mentally fudge/quantify that. The gains are the unknown. I don't think you know that till you take it and you play it against, run it through the mill. I mean, I think that's part of that is leveraging
I mean, like with most new deck archetypes that come out, it's you don't know what your gains are. You have to go out and experience that. So it's hard for, I think, to say with any kind of confidence right now if it's worth it. And I mean, in my mind, I think it is, hence why we built it. But until you go out and you play the games at this point, I don't think you know.
Oh, I think there's only one solution.
I'm going to fly to New York, and I'm going to play it on.
Brilliant.
All right, Kyle, I got a place for you to stay. All right, there we go.
Give me a year. Danny keeps bugging me to get over there. She's like, we got to go see New York. So it's coming.
Yeah.
It probably, my guess is next year. And I'll be so sick of trying to do Thanksgivings at two different families that getting out of the state would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, and you guys would fit right in with the cats at Roy's place. You're used to that, so.
Yeah, he won't even know where the cats end and we begin.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
My poor cats.
We need to stream some games.
That'd be good. I'm all for that. I have great internet and free other than 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Central Time.
So, next week sometime, keep an eye on the comments.
Yeah, if the sun is up, I will play games.
Next week sometime, listeners, keep an eye on the comments. We will let you know in the comments. We're going to stream some games with this deck, me against Kyle.
Boom. Cool.
I look forward to this.
That'll be good.
You and I should comment.
Will's never on. We'll forget
that. That actually would be a bad idea. Like having Roy on to like spectate and have him be the one that streams it actually would be a really, really good idea because it wouldn't put the stress on either of our internets. We could just stream the game. Roy can watch and comment freely without us having to worry about stuff. That could be good.
Roy, do you know how to do that?
Yeah, I can set it up.
All right, cool. We'll do that next week. Sounds good.
Sweet.
That'd be great. Look at us. Wow. What a productive moment. Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Well, props and slops. Props to my co-hosts for being productive.
Every once in a while, we have to look like we deserve to be here with Will from an effort point.
Right. It's very rare.
Yeah, I don't do enough in this community. Below me. Props to Red Saturday, because we are going to get drunk and sing until someone dies.
Wow.
I mean, there's a card tournament, too. But, like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to try and make Roy puke.
I have a big Sunday. No,
yeah.
that's not possible.
All right, we're going
to
see.
All right, I'll have to have Allah get in the way of that.
We'll make her puke. I'm okay. Anyone.
People are puking. That's what's important here.
That's his goal. Yes, I totally agree that I will talk a bit more about the card tournament side of things. It's looking like we could have up to 50 people, which makes it one of the largest 2.0 tournaments in the United States outside of Worlds. If you are interested in going in the greater New York City area or further afield, if you need a place to stay, just go on Facebook and message Aaron or myself or on the Skype group or our general Facebook place. Plenty of members of our meta have places for people to crash. There are all of Boston and D.C. Dennis are staying in my apartment. You know, we've got lots of space and friendly people who will put you up if you want to come and play in what's going to be one of the best tournaments of 2015, if not 2016 as well.
I've got a slop relating to the tournament. I want to slop Will and Kyle.
What?
Go on.
Because John and Alex, Beyond the Wall hosts, are coming to New York for this tournament.
I would like to talk about how far away they are from where we are. I would also like to talk about the number of tournaments I make in a given year versus the number ones they make.
I don't care what tournaments they go to that aren't, like, in my hometown.
Tell you what, I'll post photos of me at Worlds, and I'll be like, oh, look, here's me with the Beyond the Wall hosts. Oh, wait, they're not here.
Yeah, but I don't care about any of that. I wasn't there. Like, I only care about what happens. I'm selfish. My job.
So I would like to say, since I totally spaced and never gave a tourney report for Worlds, am I last first edition Worlds, the best podcasting Thrones player in first edition?
I believe you are.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that is true.
I'm not to leverage that next time Aaron says something I think's dumb.
You were, for a moment, the king of a dead game. Congrats. Yeah. And
then well, I mean, he didn't win. So he was more like a duke at best. Yeah. Well, right?
2 weeks later, someone actually won with the same deck. It's just, you know, worth remembering.
Yeah, well, how much Laney Wheels Within Wheels did he have to go through? I want to read that tourney report. Because I felt so good. I was so excited. I watched Kaiser and, oh, shoot, who is he playing?
Seth, yeah.
Playing Seth's game, just licking my chops. I'm like, I don't care who wins, because I thought that's who I was going to have to play as a winner. I'm like, I don't care who wins. I crush this. I totally crush this. And then Nate comes over and is like, oh, no, you got to play over here. And I was like, no, I do not need more of this Lanny crap.
How many times did you beat? You beat it twice, right?
I played it four times, twice in Swiss, twice in the cut. And I lost, then I beat it, then I beat it, then I lost.
So we were totally right about Wheels Within Wheels, at least. Like, everyone kind of looked at that card at once and went, oh, no, we can't have that.
Why do you want them to restrict Harrenhal? I was like, you're between Harrenhal and Mira restricting both those cards, you essentially took away the sheriffs of the game so that everyone could go ape. And silly things happen. I called it, it happened.
I mean, awesome thing.
Well, silly thing. I mean, the Wheels decks, though, didn't make it to the final table. I mean, both of those decks that were at the final table were pretty honest decks.
Yes.
They both lost in the top four. It's not like they didn't do amazingly. And, like, six made the cut. Like, yeah. Just because it didn't win, that's not how Thrones tournaments work. Like,
and proportionally, like, of the numbers that ran, they, I think, what, almost all of them, if not all of them, made the cut?
Yeah, and they, all but the one you beat, I think, played another one of their own decks in the first round. So, like, they cannibalized each other immediately.
Oh, I agree.
And
but
Starkwing's best deck this game ever had. I think that we can all agree on now. Vindicated, I was right. By far, best deck this game ever
yeah,
had.
Yeah, it
goes out on top.
I think it's so much better than Starkwing's. It's just straight up a better deck than the House of Pain ever was. I think all agree.
Well, I think what we could honestly say, though, is Darkwing's Dark Words is probably the best agenda that's been printed based on its performance that's it's been printed. It won, what, Worlds last year? It did well this year at Worlds. It won Stalic this year. It did well at Stalic the year before.
You said been printed. Have you read the actual printed version of the Maester's Path?
Well, okay, excuse me.
Just saying.
All right, that's true. Besides printed Maester's Path, okay. What would be at the end of the game, it was the best agenda in the meta.
Sure, but like part of that is that they nerfed the shit out of what made other agendas work. Like, the old way was every bit as good or better. Bloodthirst was every bit as good or better. Knights of the Hollow Hill is every bit as good or better. And like, they just, that's not
true.
They nerfed the Wildling shit.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
That
like,
was boring.
They should have nerfed all of those. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But to say that it's the best agenda when like, they specifically beat the shit out of every other good agenda in the game is a little disingenuous.
Aaron's just so sad that I called this shot. I Babe Ruth this, what, 3 years ago, Will? 2 years ago?
I played this
shot. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
I actually built a... I took Rab's original Darkwing and we built it with Simone and he played at Canadian Nationals. Like, the deck was out for like 2 weeks at that point. The agenda.
Big girl.
Okay.
It's okay.
That doesn't count? No? Canadian Nationals, not a real tournament?
Well, I don't know.
I wasn't going
to
say
any tournament where after you win, you have to say you're sorry to your opponent after each round. I mean, that's, I don't know if that's a real tournament.
No, no.
Sorry,
you're just
sorry,
really
you say,
getting
sorry
into the flavor. You're a sorrowful man.
Oh, that was terrible. Further props and slops?
I don't know if it's a prop or a slop, but I am going to actually take a moment to steal the podcast as my own personal vehicle for self-promotion for a moment. And that is that the day this podcast goes up, probably substantially later since I normally try to post these in the wee hours in the morning. But regardless, later that day, I'm going to be putting up a bunch of eBay auctions. Kenan first, just like my personal email is what it's listed as. So that's Kenan and then the digit one ST. Putting up a bunch of stuff that I need to clear out of the apartment. And a good portion of that is going to be gaming and LCG related. So I'm going to ditch some playmats and promos and boxes and things.
So, hey, bro, you have something to be binge watched it.
Oh, yes. I will prop Jessica Jones, which was utterly fantastic. Just as good, if not better, than I expected. And I would honestly say if you enjoy compelling, interesting, and something somewhat different superhero fiction, you should absolutely, absolutely watch Jessica Jones. All three of its leads are amazing. I have nothing but... I just want to gush over the show. I could gush over it for another hour and keep you all here, but I'll keep it short and just say watch it.
I've only seen the first episode so far, but I wholeheartedly agree. The first episode's amazing.
Yeah, I've watched 4 episodes. I already think I like it better than Daredevil.
I've been hearing that from folks.
I liked it better than Daredevil, which people have taken wrong when I say this. I still really love Daredevil.
Yeah, Jessica Jones is just a different level of amazing right now.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to the second season of Daredevil in a few months, but Jessica Jones is quite great.
I would like to prop that pretty cool season 6 Thrones poster with a bloody Jon Snow on it. I thought that was an interesting way to keep up the, like, will he, won't he? Because, I mean, he looks rather dead, but he's upright, potentially, so...
He's a white!
You can't tell if he... Yeah, you can't tell if he's undead, you can't tell if he's dead, you can't tell if he's, like, fully risen. You can't tell anything. Like, it's very good. I like the direction they went with it. A lot better than Walking Dead handling Glenn's death. I thought this did way better.
Oh, things. Spoiler alert!
Sorry if you're, like, four a month behind now.
I think at this point I'm like 2 years behind because the show started sucking.
Okay, well, yeah. They did a wait. Is he not thing.
Wait, Jon Snow is dead.
Oh, boy. I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm going to send some donuts your way. I'm sorry.
Roy,
those better be Hertz.
Sit down and read it. Oh, they will. I bought a Hertz shirt. The props to Hertz Donuts. For those of you in the Midwest, go get yourself some Hertz. Google it. Find where the nearest one is. Road trip.
There's not that many yet.
Donuts.
It probably is going to be a road trip.
Hertz Donuts. Let's see how far.
And there's two in town now. The one on the south side here near Kristen and I opened up. So, hey, sounds like another prop from me.
I bought the buy one, get one free t-shirt. So whenever you wear the t-shirt, your donuts are buy one, get one free. And I just leave it in my car, and it is halfway paid off. Feel proud of myself.
All right. Nice. According to Google, Hertz Donuts from my apartment is, the nearest one is 18 hours, 7 minutes.
I've done that drive.
Okay.
Maybe
that's doable.
To New York for Red Saturday.
It was to New Orleans, but it was still 18 hours.
Just catch a quick flight over here to Springfield Branson Regional, and then I'll pick you up at the airport, give you a quick ride over, and get you some donuts.
Don't be a flake.
I would like to say,
No. Don't be a flake and get us that tournament in a castle, and we'll be there.
Yeah, actually, you know, that's worth bringing up again for folks. I meant to actually bring that up at the beginning of the episode in case that folks maybe, I don't know, didn't listen to Props and Slops and missed that mention, because I received literally no email or comment feedback on that. So I'm gonna throw that out there again this week, just in case. If there is no feedback, I drop the idea. Not worth it. But one last opportunity. There is a castle here in town, obviously much newer than something like Stalik, but I would love to try to organize something like a mini Stalik here in the States. We're fairly centrally located. I think there could be some ground to try and cover, but obviously would be pretty expensive. So I want to gauge some real interest and whether folks would be down for that and would be willing to spend a little money on it. So let me know, either in the comments on CardGameDB or the White Book website, or shoot us an email at contact@whitebookpodcast.com.
We can combine this with the idea that was sort of brought up on last week's Beyond the Wall, it's still last week's when this will air, which talking about sort of non-FFG people stepping in and doing things that we would like to see from organized play at FFG, and organizing a sort of American mini Stalik or mini American mini Stalik tour could be something that is interesting, and something that if people are interested in, they should definitely comment either on the White Book Podcast's website or comments, or over at Beyond the Wall.
I believe in New York on Red Saturday, we are getting together with several other community luminaires and discussing, like, a players council.
I would like to slop the word luminaires.
Yeah, all I can think of is the band now. Thank you.
Anytime. I'm a giver.
I'm a giver.
Next, the reason that it was this idea was drowned out last week, we got 46 total votes on what deck I should play on Red Saturday.
Yeah.
All right. Can you hear that? Drum roll.
Counting down.
I did not vote.
There was 1 vote for Greyjoy, 4 boo. Votes for Wolf. Oops, that can't
double
count.
Boo.
3 for Dragon.
Boo.
5 for Sun.
Boo.
5 for No Agenda / Banner of the Lion. I counted them together, even though people didn't want me to. 7 for Braithian.
Okay.
10. Right in there. 10 for the Night's Watch.
Yes!
Although 5 of them were people that are going to be there. And John specifically said he wants to play it because it's bad, and then he'll have a chance to beat me. But the winner, thank you, Mr. Alex Hines, for being the tie-breaking vote, so I don't even have to cheat, was 11 for Banner of the Rose.
Alex, okay, all right, immediately, I'm sorry, okay, and I will say this to his face in 4 days. I am going to take a slop right here and slop Alexander Hines for voting incorrectly and not voting to make Aaron play Night Lannister Watch, which is the deck he should be playing if democracy worked. All right,
yeah, and people want to be.
He's Canadian. He doesn't understand it.
Yes, he's from a socialist nightmare that is Canada.
Listeners, actually, like real listeners, not like our friends being dicks. Real listeners seem to actually want me to play Lanny Rose, so that should be what we play, right?
They're just being nice.
Listeners,
nice.
The opposite.
Legit.
I really like. I like Night's Watch, Banner to the Lion.
Yeah,
but Lion to the Night's Watch is a little rough. A little rough.
It's,
I feel like there's some more things I should
watch. I think forcing Aaron into a real deck-building challenge is much more interesting than him playing a obviously Tier 1 deck that is Lannister Rose.
Yeah, I think it was my
get off his, these cards are good, these cards are bad, high horse, and forced him to play with what he thinks are bad cards. Maybe he'll have an epiphany and win one of these events.
Yeah, no, I never win events.
Nope, not that I can remember. You weren't at Worlds, didn't win Gen. You were at Gen Con, you were there.
I was at Gen Con. I went 2-2. Frickin' Dan Strohhal is really good. I don't know if you guys know that. Just, it bears repeating. And then I got mentally off with some help. And then I won my last two games and I finished 4-2 while barely remembering the last two games. It was great.
Well, that was quite the tale, Aaron. Thank you for that.
It was good.
And I think that closes another chapter of the White Book.
I was in the danger zone.
Danger zone!